Gentlemen.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 502 for the week of March 11, 2004. I am Prison Pigeon David T. Cole, and I'm here with Chicken Dancer Sarah D. Bunting, Rescue Owl Tari Ariano, and Drug Dealing Scouser Will Leach.
Oi! Oi!
Oi!
Oi!
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, he is a writer and author and commentator. You've read his books. You've read him in New York Magazine. You've heard him with us many times. It's Willie.
Willie, talking back.
Will.
Thank you. An honor, as always. I will not be talking in Guy Ritchie language for this. I will use my natural flat Midwestern gait.
We don't need all the Cockneys writing in to say their culture is not your costume. So thank you. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We are, in fact, here to talk about Guy Ritchie's latest, The Gentleman, in which Eddie Horniman, Theo James, Mr. Pamuk himself, spare to his brother Freddie's heir. Freddie's played by Daniel Inge. Eddie is serving as a UN peacekeeper when his family's lawyer journeys to the Turkey-Syria border to bring Eddie home because his father, the Duke of Halstead, has taken a bad fall. After the Duke has passed, we miss him. Shrug. Eddie learns a great deal in a short period of time, like Freddie has huge debts and not to a bank. The Duke found a novel way to raise capital to run the estate. And maybe the Duke knew about Freddie's problems because his will contains a very large surprise. Guy Ritchie spun the show off from his 2019 feature film of the same name, although if any of the characters crossed over from the movie to the show, it wasn't anyone I remembered. Not that I remembered the movie that well. It was kind of forgettable, but anyway, all 8 episodes of the first season dropped last Thursday. We may talk about events from any of them, because at least 2 of us watched the whole season for some reason. Let's do the Chen check-in. Will, should our listeners watch The Gentleman?
It's fine. Yes, sure.
Sarah?
No, but you can if you want.
Dave?
I need a minute to get prepared.
All right. I liked everything about the show except any time the leads were on the screen, which is about 90% of the time. So I got to go with a no, but I really wanted to like this show. And I think I really could have liked this show, but I didn't like this show, like, to recommend it.
Yeah.
And it makes me a little sad because I was into it for a bit.
I agree. I had an outraged outburst at the last scene, which is not what you want your reaction to be, probably at the very end of 8 episodes. I agree. It was a fine way to spend like a lazy Sunday afternoon, which is how we watched it.
Well, I enjoyed the story of it. Not like it was complicated or had a lot of twists and turns. It was just like the birth of an empire inside of an empire and other people are fighting and it's all very English, which makes it much more palatable to me for some reason.
Right.
Like if this was set in America and had the exact same storyline, I wouldn't have cared half as much as I did / wanted to. But it's also very funny and exotic and equal measures when it's in England. But every time that the leads are on screen, I'm like, when are they going to realize that they are in a Guy Ritchie production?
Right. Yeah, okay, well, let's drill down. But let's say now that we're in the spoiler zone, for those who aren't going to watch it, what happens is the Duke leaves the estate and the title to Eddie, even though he is younger. And then Eddie finds out that the Duke had been leasing the land for a giant underground weed farm, which is run by a major crime boss named Bobby Glass, played by Ray Winstone. He is currently incarcerated, so the operation's currently been managed by Bobby's daughter, Susie, played by Kaya Scolidario from Skins. And then there's another mysterious guy named Stanley Johnston with a T, played by Giancarlo Esposito, who is making such outlandishly high bids on the estate that Eddie suspects he knows about the grow-up, and spoiler, he is right. So let's now get into it. Will, you're famously a movie guy. Are there filmmakers who, when you watch their work, make you think they would be better suited for series TV? And was Guy Ritchie one of them before this?
I would have thought that actually, you know, actually Tim Grierson and I, we do the Grierson Leach podcast and we review, we do a lot of lists and stuff for Vulture. It's always very fun to do. We actually did the Guy Ritchie rankings for Vulture, which was helpful for me to go back and read what the hell we said about The Gentleman when it came out only 5 years ago, by the way. It feels longer in that time. You know, early on, Ritchie felt like this kind of new, kind of like weird blue collar sort of voice thing. And then as he kind of kept making movies, including Aladdin, let's not forget that he did Aladdin.
Oh my God.
I did forget that. Thank you.
The blue Will Smith Aladdin. That was Guy Ritchie. And so, but as he kind of like did his more, I guess, more personal movies than Aladdin, you started to realize that like, oh, that's actually all this is. This is all just, he's just having fun. He's just like creating things. He's making his little worlds, but there's not going to be any depth to them. There's not going to be anything more going on than just basically him having a lot of fun and giving Vinnie Jones a moment to have these. The character actors are always more interesting than the leads. And so that's not surprising to see that in a TV thing, but ultimately you realize this is not going to be any deeper than that. So I was curious if he does a TV series, if things get more complex and if the characters become more complex. I would say the answer is generally no. I would say, generally speaking, it's the same thing. The supporting characters are more interesting.
Yep.
That said, I still found it as piffle of an entertainment as his movies generally are anymore. Fine moment to moment, but there's nothing larger going on.
Yeah. I like the chess board movement of the series. Nothing else grabbed me about the performances of, you know, of the people we see the most on screen. And Will's right, you know, the characters around the periphery were much more interesting, you know, the father of the glass empire and the fishmonger people and the gospel and all these, you know, weird characters that come into the sphere of influence of our two leads. At times, watching Theo James and what's the actresses?
Kaya Scolaria.
Watching them not being at odds, but they're dancing around each other towards a supposed common goal of building up this secret weed farm empire. And there are times where it was like, speaking about chess, like not watching a master versus a master and not watching a master versus Blue the supercomputer, but watching two blue supercomputers playing chess against each other. Like the actual strategy of it all was interesting, but not the actual like on screen whatever. It wasn't chemistry.
No.
You know, and it wasn't sort of Guy Ritchie antics. Like, who told them to play it like that?
Right.
With this sort of monotone kind of unchanging throughout the whole series take on their characters.
Yeah, that was my problem, too. Like, it just seemed like they were both told, you're cool, just be cool the whole time. And they never vary that at all. Like, there's no, we're overjoyed about this. We're horrified. We're scared. It's just we are completely in control the whole entire time.
You know what it reminded me of? A bad version of those teleopera commercial series we did on the Extra Extra Rock, right? Like, they were trying to be Taster's Choice.
Oh, yeah.
But they forgot to really, like, kiss or anything.
Yes, yes.
You know what
yes,
I mean?
Yes.
Like, there was supposed to be something there, but they're too busy drinking coffee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Guy Ritchie's whole career, in my opinion, is what if people who should have been kicked to death 20 years ago for being twats got in underworld scrapes, and that's fine for 110 minutes. But I got to the end of the first episode and I was like, I've seen him do this before and I don't need to see anymore. Like, I already had proof of concept in Snatch, and actually maybe this is Snatch, but whatever that movie is where they're like, anything to declare, and Dennis Farina's like, yeah, don't go to England, which I still love.
Yeah.
And there's something wrong with that. There's something wrong with that being your brand. There's something wrong with those movies, most of which I saw in the theater. Like, they are an enjoyable way to spend a feature-length amount of time. And I'd hesitate to make this complaint that David T. Cole and I jointly make like every week somewhere in this podcast universe, but like, just make it a movie or make another movie. This didn't need to be 8 episodes, but again, like, moment to moment, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, It's funny, when it's like a lot of Ritchie's movies the last few years, it feels kind of like brand management slash brand extension. Mm-hmm. Like this feels like, because all of his movies, the last three or four movies have, other than Aladdin, nothing against Aladdin, but they all do feel kind of the same. I think there's the Jake Gyllenhaal Iraq movie, Afghanistan translator movie is a little different, but otherwise all the English movies are kind of the same. And this feels like, okay, now, but... aha, I deal with Netflix. And now it's a series. And there's nothing different or more to it about it. You know, when Grierson and I did the ranking of the Ritchie movies, it's telling that our top two movies are Snatch and Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. The two first ones. Yeah. Like the two big ones, right? Because everything since then has just felt a little bit more watered down, a little bit more, I'm Guy Ritchie and this is what I do. And the fact that this now for a longer period of time makes that even harder.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure that if you're Guy Ritchie's team, you look at the landscape and are like, you could be Elmore Leonard. And it's like, can you though? Like, my complaint wasn't exactly the same. I did feel like this was structured as a show. Like, it, especially as it goes on, like, it is definitely much more episodic. Like, there's different kinds of heists that they get into as it goes on. It just didn't need to be eight episodes. It needed to be six. Like, there's an event that happens. Right. In the back, I would say third of the season. I won't spoil it, but after everything that happens after that should have been one episode, and it was like two. Like it was just a little bit flabby for me. Other than the problem with the leads that Dave said, and it's funny that you mentioned Vinnie Jones, Will, because he is in here too. He's the gatekeeper at the estate. And after the first, like, maybe we were halfway through, I was like, did Vinnie Jones have foot surgery right before this? Because he's sitting in like every scene. I mean, mad respect if that's what he did. Less. And he's still working. Some English people apparently have surgery and drop out of public view forever. Anyway, we don't need to get into
theoretically,
that.
What? Theoretically.
Anyway, let's get back to this show. The Goofus and Gallant model of fictional siblings, it's one we've all seen many times. Do we think Eddie and Freddie are too much their archetypes in terms of goofing and gallanting? Will, your thoughts?
I think that, like, there's some nice little touches. I like the fact that all three siblings have the little different names for each other that are all kind of variations on it. That's like a very Ritchie sort of, that's as close to a family drama as Ritchie probably gets, because they all have different names, funny names for one another.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, it is kind of obvious from the beginning too. And like, whatever, the fuck up brother is a trope in a lot of ways. I will say that performance is entertaining until it isn't.
Like
a lot of Ritchie stuff. Like, it's like, oh, okay, he's going big, but then there's nowhere left to go. And I think that's generally the problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, what did you think?
Agree. I mean, this is kind of what I was saying before. Like, sometimes Ritchie is right on that line of credibility in terms of, like, particularly with the, like, not just giving no fucks, but putting up with no shit underworld people that his characters are purportedly dealing with. How is Freddy not dead, dug up and shot again for being annoying and dead some more? Like, he's just too, like, there is a little bit of a credibility problem that he sometimes doesn't seem to understand that the effect on the audience, which is intended, would have the same effect on other characters who would kill the guy. Good God. Like, the number of times in my notes just in the first episode that I was like, let them come for him.
Walk
go
away.
Ahead.
Right. Go on. You guys don't even like each other.
But I mean, at least he was being dynamic.
Yes.
You know, like, if Theo James' character, you know, the new Duke, was actually injected with something, then I wouldn't care so much about Freddy being offed or whatever, like getting his just desserts for being such a cokehead and an annoying character. But he wasn't. So I was sort of glad to have him around. He was like a crazy Oscar Isaac, you know, just like, just like going off. So I didn't mind him, although, like, in universe, he would have been dead within 10 minutes, I am sure.
Right.
Speaking to the Eddie thing, there's a scene in the first episode where the boxing thing, and it looks like Eddie is like, he's going to stand up and like really fight. And like, we're going to see something new about this character. Mm-hmm. And then he stands up and does nothing.
Yeah.
Like, even Richie even films it like he's about to have a rage. Yeah. Right.
Yes.
Like, he's about to have a rage out moment, and then he doesn't do anything. And to me, that was the moment where it's like, oh, that's just that's what this character is going to be. Like, that, or it's going to build up to, and then it doesn't. And I think that's another thing that's frustrating about that character and that performance.
Right. This is the other problem with that character too, is, in speaking of having nowhere to go, like, he just instantly has an instinctive sense for how to do everything. Like, he's almost never unsure at any point where it's like, is this interesting to watch? Like, he doesn't have anything to learn about the underworld. Like, it would have been different if he was the one who had, like, tangled with this before.
Yeah.
Or if Freddy, like, had an opportunity to be like, they're like this. But Freddy's just fuck up all the time. So it's like,
yeah.
Who in this show was different by the end of the series?
Yeah.
From the start? Freddy, maybe? Like, yeah. Freddy only, possibly? Like, everybody mm-hmm. else seemed to be showing zero character progression or growth or change.
Mm-hmm.
Freddy, like, 10%, and yeah. he wins by that 10%. It's kind of crazy how monotone the show is.
Yeah, well, there's Charlotte, who, like, leaves in the first episode, and then it, someone remembers, like, oh, yeah, there was a third sibling, and she comes back towards the end of the season, sure. and she has gone through changes, but it's like, you know, for most of the season, you don't understand why she's there. And same with the Dixons. Like, after they're on screen for the first two episodes, like, they don't come back until the end either. And then yeah. in the interim, they introduce this whole other underworld figure who's, like, supposedly a big bad, played by Max Beasley from Glitter, the Mariah Carey movie. Like, there's so many weird choices made. And, like, you know, to give a spoiler for something that doesn't happen, the outburst I had at the end was, like, you two aren't gonna fuck? Like, not to say they had amazing romantic chemistry, but, like, you're both hot. At least kiss.
I'll push back on that. I thought it was kind of nice that they're... No, they're hot.
All
but
right.
I thought it was kind of nice that they just wanted to be mobsters.
Fair enough.
You know, yeah. like, you don't have to... The test, the lady's talking about.
Oh, the Bechdel test.
It was sort of like they circumvented it completely because nobody's even talking about it.
Yeah. that's fair enough.
I guess the thing that's interesting about the TV show, too, is, you know, when we did our rankings, we talked about what's the best performance that anyone's given in a Guy Ritchie movie. And we basically hit on probably Brad Pitt in Snatch,
yeah.
which, for the record, he's, like, in the movie very short amount of time. Like, he pops in, he makes an impression, a big impression, and then he leaves. And Pump comes back again and then leaves again. I think that's telling, not only is he maybe the best character, he may actually be the deepest character in all of Guy Ritchie's movies. So to learn that that doesn't improve and expand it out to a TV show, I think, tells you who Guy Ritchie is.
It is time to go around the dial. First up, Tara.
So when the Fox sitcom Animal Control started showing promos for its first season last year, I saw Joel McHale and I saw a newbie first responder with a boa constrictor wrapped around his throat. And I thought, okay, it's Community meets Sirens. No, thank you. But last week, I noticed I had screeners for season two. I thought I could probably watch them and find something to write about. And I did. I wrote about watching 16 episodes of Animal Control in 2 days. And respecting Joel McHale for the first time in years. Hear me out! Animal Control is about what you think it is. It's in Seattle, which is Vancouver. Two pairs of animal control officers drive around answering calls about unruly creatures, and that would already be very sirens-y, even if it did not have the Joel McHale character as the cynical veteran training the goofy probie. That's Michael Rowland as Shred, a retired snowboarder who, you know, is not snowboarding anymore because he had a terrible injury. The show also has siren star Kevin Bigley, but now he is playing Rick, the former animal control manager who left his job after a catastrophic mink attack in which he lost an ear. He is now independently wealthy from the settlement from the city. Seems like a small price to pay because he's got a replacement ear that looks fine. Anyway, there's also Patel, who's played by Ravi Patel, and Victoria, played by Grace Palmer. They're the other officers. He's married with kids. She's a bisexual drug user from New Zealand. And finally, Emma, played by Vella Lovell from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. She's the manager at the office who replaced Rick. She got the job through a connected aunt. She worries that she's not up to it. So the animals add a higher degree of difficulty than a workplace comedy typically demands. And considering how hard it must be to wrangle them, the animal scenes are really well done and they have a great variety of them. The cast of unknowns and medium knowns have great chemistry in all combinations. There's also, we'll see if Dave remembers this guy, Canadian comic Jerry D. Do you remember that name?
Yeah. Did he have a show? Oh, no, that was somebody else.
That's Mike Bullard, but he's like that lane.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, he plays Templeton Dudge, a dirk animal control officer from another precinct who is gunning for Emily's job. I know what you're thinking. You're sick of Joel McHale because he is everywhere constantly hosting and guest judging on unscripted competition shows and even on like the Fourth Hour of Today and other stuff. I was once like you. He is used in this show, however, to perfection. His character, his name is Frank Shaw, is just enough like Jeff Winger that it's not a huge stretch of McHale's acting skills, but it's different enough to make him compelling and likable. And again, seeing him be cute with animals really helps. This is not a sitcom that reinvents the wheel. There's already two pairs of obviously endgame characters not getting together yet. But the cast is good. The jokes are solid. The animals are cute. I respect Joel McHale now because when researching a piece I wrote about him, I found out he is still married to his college sweetheart, which when you see Joel McHale, you would not think he's a guy who's still married to his age-appropriate mother of his only two children, but he is. So life takes you places you can't expect. Sometimes llamas are involved. Animal control is good. I don't know what to tell you. I might actually make Dave sample it because I think he would like it too. And for my plug, my 360 coverage of what is apparently my new favorite show. I wrote something last week about Sarah Chalk and her bad TV love interest because she's in the season two premiere. And then I wrote a piece that by the time you hear this is either up or about to be up, just about, oh, is Joel McHale good? I didn't think I would ever write that either, but maybe he is. So you can find that at my page at crack.com, and we'll link that in the show notes.
Sounds like your ultimate show now would be a show in which two different animals mm-hmm. are married the yes. first time they put eyes on each other.
Right.
And then we see how that goes. Animal married at first sight.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Great. All right, Will, what have you been watching recently?
Okay, so I wanted to talk about The Curse for three reasons. One, at the Oscars, Emma Stone won over a Native American actress, which connected to The Curse and her character in a way that I thought was pretty fascinating.
Oh, I didn't even think of that, but you're right.
Yeah. And seemed to react in a way that seemed more sincere. Maybe than Whitney, but also, I don't know, I feel like, I imagine like Whitney having a very angry Instagram story about Emma Stone beating Lily Gladstone, but not actually believing it. Two, when I was on this show two or three times ago, I put up a Nathan For You episode. And three, because of three, I finally saw the end of The Curse, and now I regret doing that. And I'm sorry. I will confess. My podcast colleague, Tim Grierson, loves The Curse. And I love Emma Stone in The Curse. And I actually think there's good stuff going on. I'm a Safdie stan. I'm down with those guys. But I have to say, you know, I'm writing novels now. And I used to always joke that, like, it would be so much easier if at the end of this, rather than resolving everything, I said, hey, it turns out that the Earth crashes into the sun and everything dies and none of this matters. And it would be so much easier to actually do that. It would make my life easier. People would be mad, but I could just say it was performance art or something, or I was, like, playing with the audience expectations, which, of course, brings me to the end of The Curse because I finished it. And it definitely, and for the record, I also had big problems with the last episode of the rehearsal. I was probably more morally offended by the last episode of The Rehearsal as much as I, with The Curse, I was just like, oh, so fuck off then. Okay, I got it.
Soundboard.
Yep.
So that was the three of those things coming together. There's good stuff in The Curse. I actually think you could make a good argument the last episode of The Curse should have just been that episode of Rachel Ray. Just the full episode of that, that would have been a messing with the audience that I could have got along with. The fact that they did that made me feel very stupid about caring about the whole show. And I also feel like had a lot of people doing the no, here's what they're actually doing. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't have this much time for Reddit. I just don't. So at a certain level, finishing The Curse, and congratulations, Emma Stone, who is wonderful in Poor Things and very good in The Curse, but screw The Curse, fuck off it. That was what and plugs, check out my Reddit about why The Curse. I write books. My recent book is The Time Has Come. It comes out in paperback in 2 months, which is also when my next book is due, which is why this is the only, you're the only three people I've talked to in about 3 months. So thank you for listening to me.
Correct.
And check the show notes for links to all of Will's books where you can buy books.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sarah is here to say she's going to talk about TV in the usual way.
Oh, boo. Savory liminal space, boyee. Okay, so if you have read my True Crime Review newsletter, Best Evidence, you know how I feel about Eric Nielsen and Andrea L. Dennis's book, Rap on Trial, Race, Lyrics, and Guilt in America. If you never read Best Evidence before, you should try it. It's free, but I loved it. It came out in 2019. It is fairly short. I could shorthand a description of recent documentary on Paramount Plus, As We Speak, colon, Rap Music on Trial, as It's Rap on Trial, the movie, and it's not that. Nielsen is a producer on it and a Talking Head interviewee in it. Killer Mike, who wrote the book's foreword, is one of the first hip-hop brains that our host/Virgil in the documentary, Kemba, decides to pick about the issue of rap lyrics as, quote, character evidence. This documentary is everything that I hoped. I was quite excited about it. This topic is extremely thought-provoking. I have spent a lot of time writing about it. The documentary is from MTV Productions. And you know how sometimes in a Truffaut movie or a Capra movie, it's like about this thing, but then it just is over here doing this other thing for like 20 minutes. It doesn't really explain itself. As We Speak isn't exactly analogous to that, but it has a charming, similar vibe. It's like this check this out energy that is curious, but not amateurish and annoying. Sometimes there's an animation. Sometimes there's a dramatized trial pleading as an attorney is explaining to Kemba the quicksand of the average plea deal. It's disciplined and effective somehow, even though at one point, like they're in a bar and it's black and white film stock and a bunch of hip hop artists and actors are declaiming Shakespeare, and there's like a comparison to the like murderous intent of hip-hop lyrics. The film is like, it has its own plan, it expects you to keep up, and it's fun trying. It's directed by J.M. Harper, and someone should turn J.M. Harper and Kemba loose on a series, true crime series, random like documentary art history series. I don't care, they're a good team. Can read my review of that at realityblurred.com, which is the new home of Best Evidence. And I interviewed the author of Manhunt, James L. Swanson, about his new book, The Deerfield Massacre. That interview will hit Thursday on Best Evidence, and you can find that and everything else we ever wrote for 5 years at bestevidence.fyi.
All right, quickly, before I get into what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Greats, just want to say we're almost at the end of Shogun because of the screener privilege. Mm-hmm. Man, this show's good.
It's really good.
Wow, it's so good.
It's really good.
One left, and I'm like, really want to get to it, but I also want to keep it around because I don't want it to be over. Mm-hmm. Man, they're just nailing it. This is just like really strong. Hopefully start to finish. Haven't finished it yet, but like the last episode in which I was pretty sure characters who had plot armor weren't going to be dispatched, but they still fucking sold it. And I was like, throughout the whole episode. So I was very impressed. Anyway, so that is just like a follow-up. Shogun's still good. You still got many weeks of good Shogun ahead of you, dear listeners. All right. Mm-hmm. Here's what's coming up in the Extra Hot Great Cinematic Universe. Coming up this Friday, it is TV's Manhunt, which is Apple's version of Love is Blind, except you can only date Abraham Lincoln, and the date must end with you shooting him. That is my understanding of it.
I would watch that. Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And then the next episode after that is going to be Extra Hot Great 503. That's going to drop just near Sarah's birthday. Happy birthday, Sarah.
Happy birthday, Thanks, Sarah. Buddy.
And that is going to be an extra credit bonanza. Mm-hmm. And then we've got Extra Extra Hot Great 289. That's going to be the March Forcening. And if you want to watch, we're going to be talking about Legends of Tomorrow Season 3, Episode 9, Bebo, the God of War. Thanks to Tim, who forced us to watch that. And then the next Prime after that is going to be Prime 504, is going to be the Roadhouse movie. Shut up.
We're just going to talk about
it. Yeah, sure. You know.
Yeah, on TV.
We welcome back Taylor S. Cole to talk about that. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club to join and support the podcast. It is time for the Extra Hot Great Canon. Presenting this week is Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello. Law & Order Season 6, Episode 12, Trophy, aka the one where young Livia Soprano 99% confirms for us that Claire and Jack are doing it because she and Jack were also doing it back in the day, doesn't tend to show up on top 20 lists of the great Mothership episodes. Obviously, I disagree with that, but I think it's got a solid Extra Hot Great Canon CV, and here is why. Number one, when I described it just now, you absolutely went, oh, yeah, that one. That's a banger. Number two, a pair of city sanitation workers are doing a Mets trivia bit in the cold open. Not for everybody. It's not nothing. Number three, the episode is very typical of the show in some ways, including a legendary headline that it is ripped from. There are other headlines, but chiefly it's a take on the Atlanta child murders and the contention by some, including Wayne Williams himself, that authorities just wanted to pin a bunch of under-investigated killings on Williams and move on. So not only is it a major case that we still talk about today, but it concerns major issues with law enforcement, which ditto. Police departments' failure to take the disappearance of Black children seriously, incompetence overlapping with personal and institutional biases, prosecutorial misconduct its perpetrators refused to back down from that we're still contending with today. But there's also a drive-by comment about Ray's age, clip one.
They call it community-based policing. I call it walking in circles with 20 pounds on my waist.
I guess I'm lucky. All I have to carry around is Junior here.
And the customary compliment of, hey, it's that guys and gals, including David, Steve from Married with Children, Garrison as a defense attorney, John Ramsey's Judge Walter Schreiber, and Isaiah Whitlock Jr. as the actual perpetrator of the crimes McCoy and young Livia locked up for the serial killings. Whitlock isn't what people tend to remember about this episode, but he's quite underrated here. In the role of a deluded avenging angel, he could go really big, but the straightforward sincerity with which he explains his deranged Jesus-y motivations is much more chilling. Clip two.
Justin was a martyr to our Lord.
And the other boy, he was wearing a cross.
Mm-hmm. And he stole, defiling our Lord. Had to be destroyed.
Same notes Andrew Dillard left. Did you get the idea from reading about him?
It wasn't an idea. God put him in my path.
And of course, there's young Livia herself, Layla Robbins, as former ADA Diana Hawthorne, absolutely torching everyone with side eye in all of her scenes, but we will get back to that as best we can in this legendarily visual medium of podcasting. But here we are at number four. The episode is somewhat atypical of the show as well, in that ordinarily it has little compassion for defendants and even less patience for the idea that Jack McCoy's self-righteousness doesn't always justify whatever sketchy or disproportionate means he's using to effect a conviction. The case in chief in this episode is the wrongful conviction of a not Isaiah Whitlock guy for the string of murders of Black boys. A previous assistant of Jack's, Diana Hawthorne, allegedly buried evidence pointing to the actual guy because they could get a conviction on the guy they had, quote, in hand, and because she and Jack were in the bone zone. Now Jack has to fight to clear his name. Normally, the show puts us firmly in Jack's corner in situations like these, and yes, they are not just plural, but myriad. Trophy, meanwhile, seems to maybe think Jack is kind of a fuckhead. This is, of course, also the closest the show had yet come to admitting that Jack and Claire were sleeping together, and certainly implying that Jack is a serial second-chair fucker isn't exactly a mash note to the character, but Trophy really does seem to side with Diana when she's saying the quiet part out loud in clip three.
What do you expect him to say? I expect him to tell me the truth. Oh. Why? Look, Claire, you know how Jack operates. Yes, but if he never even saw the statement. Fine, it got lost. It happens. You don't believe that. I know Jack McCoy. I worked with him for 4 years.
I know.
And I slept with him for 3.
I know. And maybe that's affecting your judgment.
It's not affecting yours.
You are sleeping with him, aren't you?
Yeah, that silence went on for another 40 minutes. Claire never does respond out loud, but come on. Nor does the episode seem to sign off on Claire putting up with slash covering for Jack's bullshit again, some more, especially when the city has already settled the case, but Jack is determined to prosecute Diana for basically embarrassing him. Except Claire has to actually do the prosecuting as his proxy. I'm sure that'll go great. Clip 4.
It's not an element of the crime.
The judge disagreed.
So, Ms. Kincaid, have you ever seen the defendant McCoy withhold exculpatory material?
Yes.
You're going to say that?
I have to say that.
I didn't believe I had a duty to disclose.
He didn't believe he had a duty to disclose. Does that help?
Not if you say it like that.
As usual, Claire is obliged to point out that the line is well back in the rear view on whatever Jack is doing, and also as usual, he is impatient with Claire's ethicsing, but this time the show seems to hint that both of them should consider kicking rocks. Of course, they're both credits cast, so Diana has to get punished for the system's sins, or possibly because she joined literally every sighted viewer in bemoaning Jack's trademark greasy-collared barn jacket. But when Claire delivers her big gotcha line on Cross, even the cellos of minute 43 mic drops aren't entirely convinced that, quote, getting Diana to admit that she felt uncomfortable at the office after she and Jack stopped fucking is exactly grounds for a victory lap. Clip 5.
And you wanted his admiration.
Yes, he was my boss.
And your lover. You wanted his affection.
Yes.
And what better way than to make him a gift of that promotion?
That's not what this was about.
Of course it was. He never asked you to do anything. You decided to get him what he wanted. And like all good gifts, it was a surprise.
Good one, lady who's doing exactly the same thing. This is the thing about Trophy. Most people who remember it probably have not shelled it for themselves as the one where heartless mega bitch young Livia almost ruins Jack McCoy. That's probably how I remembered it before rewatching. But I think it's something else, something a little unusual for this show. A proto-example of the anti-hero. Not to be all Tory spelling, 90210 invented plural nouns, crackpot claims over here, but you can't hear Diana's bitter heartbreak or Jack's obstinate refusal to admit any fault and not feel like your, quote, protagonist is actually garbage. Clip 6.
She's a smart girl, Jack. I don't think until today I even admitted it to myself.
That you committed a heinous crime?
No. That I did it for you. For my man. I didn't know women like me did things like that.
I never asked you.
No. But I thought you'd be grateful.
You didn't need my gratitude.
Guess I did, Jack.
And in the end, Diana takes a plea and loses her license, and here's where it gets really dark. Clip 7.
You didn't have to take the deal, Claire.
You could have won the case.
I know, but I thought that's what you wanted.
Huh? This is the episode's button. Claire, ordinarily the voice of reason, just laughs off the fiery implosion of her predecessor as though she's not following directly in Diana's Manolo steps. Law and Order has a pretty dim view of humanity anyway, and this episode has already dropped some bleak-as-hell zingers, like the first victim's teammate shrugging that he's sorry the kid died because he was their best forward. But Trophy has a real noir sensibility. Everyone is compromised and terrible. Nobody learns anything. Nothing will change or improve. See you next Thursday at 10. Bold move for a network procedural in the 90s. Now, that may not have been intentional. Looking at this episode through 2024 eyes may show us things we weren't really intended to find, but find them I did. So, for the acting showcase Law & Order surely meant for us to enjoy, and the All Cops Are Bastards showcase it maybe didn't mean to provide, I hope you will see the appeal of putting Trophy in the Extra Hot Crate canon. Thank you.
Gorgeous job, Sarah. Will, you chose this from our list of submissions. Please start us off.
Yeah, so it's I'm so glad you framed it exactly right, Sarah, which is the idea of what it must have felt like to watch it then and what it's like to watch it now. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I actually feel up until that last button that actually it is a little bit like it feels like it can play straight in 2024. It feels like the show is generally aware and pointing to the idea that Jack is wrong in this situation, even while still morally feels like he's done the right thing and so on. How this is shady and across the board. The show, I think, does a good job of riding that line and going back and forth. And then that last line happens, which is actually like, it's actually kind of like in outside of context, it's actually kind of funny. It's after this very serious episode, it's kind of nice to have a moment where someone briefly smiles for a half a second. It's just then you realize why they're smiling and what exactly we are supposed to take from that. Because I do feel like the whole show actually, I think, can play straight in 2024. I really do. I feel like the fact that there's not a moment where someone turns to the camera and says, you know, at this point, you should talk to your HR department. Now, also, like that feels like how it would be made now, right? Mm-hmm. And I actually kind of like that it's made that there then, made the way it is now, where like you are able to take from this what you will and see the complexities of it and also understand the inappropriateness of it. But then that last scene comes and you're like, oh, the reason that no one turns the camera and does that is no one really thought to do that in a way that we really, really think about that now. And so I found myself really torn because first off, just a reminder that like my parents live out here. My parents have moved here near me in Georgia, and I love it because I'll go visit my dad and he's watching Columbo. He did not watch Columbo at all when he was younger, but he's retired now and he's tired. And there's always a Columbo on, and it makes me happy every time I get there. And I'm realizing watching this, like, right, when I retire, this is all I'm going to do is watch a lot. That's literally I'm going to do. And I will gracefully pass into the afterlife in a happy place that this is a comfortable, warm on a bed of McCoy.
You and Claire and Diana. Yeah, okay.
Hey, listen, I did what he wanted, you know? And so for me, like, just to be able to see that was really great. The last scene almost undoes it for me because it takes me out of the context, right? It takes me like, oh, right, no, wait, now I'm back in the 90s. Like, for the most of it feels like it is it's a better version of something while I can bring the context now. That last line, while, again, nice to see someone smile, and they do have this great chemistry together, as we all saw throughout those entire seasons. That's kind of some warmth in that. I'm old. I don't know if we're voting yet or if we're just discussing yet, but I would certainly say that it brought forth a lot of thoughts about Law and Order and my relationship with all of these characters in a way a typical episode doesn't, in a way that I actually quite enjoyed. And even that last button, which took me out a little bit, still actually got my brain kind of racing a little bit. And again, there's no way this thing is better if, like, literally at one point it turns over and says, like, I do work for corporations. I've had to watch those videos of, this is Bob. Bob is the superior here. This is Bertha. I'm glad that's not here. That's really, really not in here. If just because it kind of presages all of it. It's before that was really such a massive thing. So I think you get a more honest portrayal of this situation. But you wonder if the lesson is entirely learned by that last beat. So it was an absolutely fascinating experience to watch.
Yeah, I love this episode. Sarah and I were on Slack yesterday, and she was like, I don't remember why I put this on the list. I'm like, you'll get there. And it sounds like you did.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with everything Will said, and, you know, agreeing with what Sarah said about how this played at the time and how it plays now. And, you know, there were always episodes of Law and Order where, and there it's, this is true of every procedural where it's like, there's one episode a season where someone has to examine, like, did we do the right thing? Did we overstep? There's, and you know, that's Copaganda too. If there's one episode about like someone getting done by internal affairs, the reason is to draw a line under that one bad character and say, but our characters are all good. Like, and it's the same with the prosecutors here. One of my other favorite episodes is one that I've considered doing for the canon, although I don't know what, if I would, you know, step to Sarah in this arena, but the one where Burt Young plays a rapist who's just been released.
Oh, God, yeah.
And
sure.
It's the same sort of a thing where it's like McCoy totally on a rampage to like ruin this guy's life because he's convinced he is not really, whatever, rehabilitated.
Reformed.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And he's like, I'm going to, you know, he wants to move to another district. Well, he can't. Like, just absolutely life ruining. And then in the same way this does, the end has to be like, and it turns out he was right all along. It's like, but was he? Or did his actions cause this outcome? Yeah, this episode, I mean, despite being off model for Law and Order, like you said, you know, other than that, it's the one time in the season where we have to consider the possibility that Jack McCoy's not always right about everything. It has it all. It has like a great character actor performance by Isaiah Whitlock Jr. as the actual killer. Classic body find at the beginning, with or without the mats, like this. This is what you come to Law and Order for. A couple of guys doing their jobs, finding a body, as you do in New York every day. We all know this. And then the reveal about like confirming what, at that point, I think when I was watching, I had never even considered, which is like, oh my God, they've been fucking this whole time. I'm so stupid. But it's like the scream I screamed when that happened.
Yeah. They really low-toned it quite well. Like,
yeah.
I feel like most other shows would have made it very obvious that that was happening. And But that, I mean, the clip I pulled of that long silence of Diana being like, this is how you're going to play it?
Yeah.
Eighth grade? Okay.
She's perfect. And there
She's
were
flawless.
So many lines that I also said this to Sarah yesterday that I had in my notes before they appeared on screen, like, I took her to Ireland, which is like one I always remember. Like, this is a great one. It's a classic for a reason. Everything you said is right. Law and Order is bad, basically. And, you know, I don't watch SVU anymore and I don't watch the new Law and Order, but I still, there's like, they knew what they were fucking doing when they built this show. Like, it just works. And like, sometimes they accidentally get one more right than others. This is an excellent example of that happening. So I was so happy to watch it again. Thank you, Will, for picking it. Sarah, thank you for writing this wonderful presentation. Dave.
Yeah, really good presentation. I think the last time I watched Law and Order, like week to week, was probably when Chris Noth was still on the show. So I don't think I ever have seen this before. But I thoroughly enjoyed watching McCoy get called out. And there's something about Sam Watterson being indignant that is very like lemonade on a porch for some reason. Like, it's very soothing to watch him be angry about something.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the crazy eyebrows that play into it. I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it might be classified as a type of drug to be used in future studies. It's great. Just a couple other random thoughts. There's a private school, I think, called the John Cheever something or others. Do you think the people at the honor roll there are called overachievers?
Yes.
I do. That's it. That's all I got. I know we're short on time, so I'm going to make my presentation very, very short, which is to say, great presentation. And it is great just to see McCoy sort of, you know, being backed into a corner and what happens there. So great choice.
Yep.
All right, let's put this to the official vote. Will, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
Indeed, yes.
Tara.
Yes, me too.
Me too.
Thanks, guys.
That means that Law & Order Season 6, Episode 12 Trophy, you are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Gray Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It is time to discover the winner and loser of the week. Sarah has this week's winner.
I do. It's James Wolk, technically, but really it's all of us future readers of the oral history of this production of Happy Face, which is Robert and Michelle King's next project. It will be on Paramount Plus. Dennis Quaid has already been cast as this IRL serial killer. It seems like it's like a lot of semi-Jesus-y on-camera talent, and then the Kings. It's going to be a wild one. I can't wait. But James Wolk has just joined that cast. So I guess we'll see what happens. Good for him. And us.
And loser of the week, Tara.
Kate Middleton's uncle, whose name is Gary Goldsmith, he was on the current season of Celebrity Big Brother in the UK. He was the first housemate to get evicted. And I think that we can all agree it's the worst thing to happen to that family all week.
Speaking about the worst thing to happen to you all week, you know what time it is?
Do you?
Non-regulation yep. Game time.
That sounds right.
It is non-regulation game time due to daylight savings time, I guess. Dave just woke up not ready to do a game time, and I... Like all good gifts, it was a surprise when I went in and woke him up and said, I wrote a game time. And wrote is doing a lot of heavy lifting because it's 19 questions. In fact, I'm calling this one the World Series of 19 questions because there is a theme. And in honor of our sweet, beloved guest, Will, the theme is sports. Sports and scripted television because that's all I know. Our order will be Dave, Sarah, Will, are you ready to play the World Series of 19 questions?
Yes.
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 All right. Our number one is a thing. Dave.
Is this thing from a show that is currently in production?
No. Sarah.
Is this thing bigger than a bread box?
No.
Is this thing from a show that was on the four major networks? Are you cable?
Yes. You can keep going.
Okay. Is this from NBC?
Yes.
Is this from must-see TV?
Yes. Good question.
was this owned by a character that we knew?
I'm going to say ask a different question. I can't really answer that.
Okay,
owned,
fair enough.
I will say owned does not pertain, so ask something else.
Okay, fair enough. Is this something that appeared on one episode?
Yes.
Oh, I was actually expecting the opposite answer to that one. is this something that was on Friends?
No. Back to Dave.
Sportsy, must-see TV, NBC. Is this something from Seinfeld?
Yes.
It's a thing not owned by a particular character. Huh. A thing. Is it, I can ask a question, but really there's nowhere to go after that except just to say what I'm thinking. So I'm just going to say what I'm thinking.
Okay.
Is it the loogie?
It's the magic loogie.
I was going to say, is it bodily Hernandez. Fluid? But what else would it be?
Nice game, pretty
Keith
boy.
Keith Hernandez loogie, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good job,
back
Dave.
Back into the left.
I considered wearing that t-shirt today.
I think maybe I had it in forefront of mind because Sarah's I'm Not Here Zoom picture is baseball people. Maybe him,
yes,
too?
Yes, he is one of them.
He's one of them? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you, Sarah.
There we go. It is.
Yeah. Eating popcorn.
All right. So, Dave, you get to go first. This is also a thing.
Okay. Is this, I'm going to ask the same question, a thing from a TV show currently in production? It is not.
Okay. Bigger than a bread box?
No. Will.
Is this from one of the four major networks pre-cable?
Yes.
Wow.
Is this from NBC?
Yes.
All right.
Is this from must-see TV?
Mm-mm. No.
Dang it. Wow.
Back to Dave.
With a shot.
Is this a comedy?
No. Sarah.
NBC, it's a sports thing. It's not a comedy. Was it from a procedural?
No. Will.
Was it from a show pre that debuted pre 1991.
No.
Okay.
Dave.
Did it debut this century?
Yes.
Is it an hour-long drama?
Yes.
Okay. Oh boy. I think was it a top 10 show?
Mm-mm. Okay. Sarah.
Was it from Friday Night Lights?
Yes.
That thing, which is not bigger than a bread box, was it in more than one episode?
Yes.
I mean, Tammy Taylor's hair is bigger than a bread box. It's not really sports related.
If you shave it, and you put it in a box, it's going to be smaller than a box.
Yeah, it'd probably fit in a
bread box.
You
could squish it, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is it the, shit, that thing on the wall that they tap while they're leaving the locker room? Is it that thing?
That would have been good, but no.
Was going to be my guess. And also ends the things I know about the show, so it's bad for me.
Yeah, you're going to have a hard time with this.
Is it football number 12?
Yeah. Is it something that features in the famously disliked strike messed up season?
Probably.
Okay. I want the ding.
Okay.
I don't take my words where I can get them.
Sorry.
Is it larger than a football?
No.
I'm tempted to ask, is it the exact same size as a football? But Friday Night Lights. Well, okay, I'm just like, my exposure to Friday Night Lights has basically been things in the canon.
I'll say you guys got, one of you was really close to it and then moved away. I'll say that.
Is it in a sports related? It's a sports object.
No, it's just something from the show.
Oh, the theme is sports. So it could be anything from the show. Got it. Okay. I don't know. Is it the exact same size as football?
Smaller.
Okay.
Sarah.
Is it Tammy Taylor's hair?
It's Tammy Taylor's hair.
Oh. Amazing.
Good job, Sarah. All right, so you get to go first on the next one. It is, let's say it's an event.
Mm. Oh, gosh, an event. Is it on a cable show?
Will.
Is it on a show that is currently airing?
Yes.
I like that bell, Will.
Thank you. Feels good. Is it on? Is it from a show from the four major networks pre-cable?
Yes.
Oh, that was very clarifying.
It's hard to ding something like that.
I mean,
okay. Fair. Is it from? Is it a procedural?
Dave.
Okay. Sorry, currently in production.
Yes.
And then there's that weird answer about being on a four. Is it because of, all right.
Go ahead and ask, because the answer is probably yes, what you're going to ask.
I don't know what you think I'm going to ask. So.
All right.
All right, I'm just going to clarify. Is it from a four major network show?
I mean, I have to say originally.
Okay, got it. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh.
I thought maybe it was Will's weird qualifiers about pre-cable and all that.
Yeah,
that's all.
No,
I understand.
It's moved.
Has, okay, that was going to be my next question, just to clarify. I think I just got my answer. It has moved networks such as they are defined.
Exactly.
Did it move from a terrestrial network to a streaming service? Okay.
Yes.
Is the streaming service... Is the streaming service Netflix that it moved to? It is not.
No. Sarah.
Is the streaming service Max?
Will.
Is the streaming service Paramount Plus?
Okay.
Dave.
Jesus. Okay. Is the original network... Wait, hang on a sec. I'm going to rewind here a sec. We haven't established genre or anything, right?
Correct. Okay. That's correct.
Just that it's not a procedural.
Yeah. Not a procedural. Okay. Is this a comedy show? Okay. Is this a... fuck it. Is this from Fox? Okay.
Yes. not counting where it moved.
Right, right. Started on Fox.
It did start on Fox.
Started on Fox, moved somewhere.
Yes.
We haven't established where it's moved. Okay, so if it's on Fox, did it move to Hulu?
Yes.
Okay. Sitcom. Okay. Is this show animated?
Yes.
What the fuck? Animated show? Oh, boy. Is this a one-time event on the show?
No. Sarah.
Is it Simpsons adjacent?
Oh, adjacent, yes.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Is it an annual event?
No. Will.
Is it Futurama related?
Yes, it's from Futurama.
Is it from the show Futurama that I don't know anything about and therefore need to move on?
Yes.
Is it Donkey Fest 2024? There's no Donkey Fest.
So close. Oh, no.
So close.
There's a lot of seasons I didn't watch in the middle, Dave.
Okay. It's an event.
Well, yes, okay. For lack of a better word.
All right. I have an idea. I'm just trying to figure out how to phrase a question to massage a yes answer.
Don't overthink it.
Is it on Futurama a sporting event?
Yes.
Okay. Isn't an event insofar that it happens all the time and people like to gather there and watch it?
Yes.
Just name the sport.
I just want to.
He wants to be right. I get it.
Is this Blurn's Ball?
Yes, it is Blurn's Ball. Good job, Dave.
Okay, well, they finally jazzed up baseball.
So it's not Donkey Fest.
It's not Donkey Fest, but you're kind of close. It's as nonsensical as Donkey Fest. So, yeah.
It is. Okay, the next one is a thing, Dave.
There it is.
It's a thing.
Yep.
Oh, it's to me. Yep. It's a thing. Is this thing from a TV show that is currently airing?
No. I mean, not airing new episodes, which I assume is what you meant.
Sorry, in production. Correct. Yes. Thank you.
Sarah.
Was it on one of the 4.5 networks pre-cable?
Yes, it was.
I'll say terrestrial next time. I'll just say it. I'll make it easier for us.
It's a tricky one to phrase.
Was it bigger than a bread box?
No. Will.
Was it mechanical in nature?
No. Dave.
Is it from a network that starts with one of the first 6 letters in the alphabet?
No. Great question, though. Sarah, he did some work for you there.
Yeah, he did. Thanks, Dave. Was this on a comedy?
Yes.
Was this on a must-see TV comedy?
Surely was.
Was this from Friends?
Yes.
Okay, but if it's smaller than a bread box... Oh.
And, I just want to remind you, we also did, Mrs. Coach's Hair, Magic Loogie. We're interpreting sport very liberally.
Does this date from Monica and Ross's childhoods, this item?
No, good question. No.
Okay.
Will.
Was this a recurring thing on Friends?
No, just in one episode.
Friends.
Perhaps one I know everyone except Will has watched, I'll say.
I just got there. Fuck.
Smaller bed box, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Has been established.
Is this an object you wear?
No. Sarah.
Is this a spherical object?
Yes. I think Sarah's got it.
Is this a ball that a character stop bouncing, but I just can't remember which character it is?
It wasn't bouncing, it was throwing, but you got there. You know what I'm talking about. So yes. Good job, Sarah.
Nice. Ugh. All right.
Okay. We have time. Let's say we have time for one more. What are the scores?
Right now, it is all tied up. Me too.
Oh.
Dave too. Will is also here.
Okay.
Yes, I'm here.
Let's see if this changes everything. Sarah, our next item is...
Can I make a suggestion? Because this is the final one. It should be worth 2 points.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, true.
How about three?
No.
All right, for a potential 2 points. Mm-hmm. Sarah, our next thing is a thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, is this bigger than a bread box?
Yes.
Ooh, finally.
It's the first thing on the list that has been.
Okay, great. Is this thing square or rectangular in shape?
No. Will.
Is this from a show currently in production?
Sort of.
Sort of. All right. Well, we'll give you. I know you like the ding, so let's give you.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, is this from a terrestrial network?
The episode I'm thinking of was. Yes.
Okay. Huh.
This is another moved locations sort of a thing. Okay.
That's what the questions are for, Tara.
Okay, sorry.
That's what the questions are for.
Well, we only have 9 minutes now.
Yeah, sorry. Is the original network something that did not come from the first six letters of the alphabet?
Yes.
Okay. That's
it's
a
an
great
NBC
question.
Heavy game.
I really love it. Is this currently streaming on Netflix?
I don't think so, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Can we recap? Because my brain just fell out.
NBC, bigger than
it's
a bread
bigger
box.
Bigger than a bread box, but not a rectangle or square.
And it's moved.
New episodes are not on Frasier. Well, I gave it away. New episodes are not on Netflix. It's Frasier. Whoops.
And we should know your Frasier.
That is somebody somewhere will subscribe to the Frasier streaming network.
God.
It's got one really good show. This is why it's non-regulation, because it's a shambolic mess by me.
Yes.
Is it from the show Frasier?
Dave, yeah. It is.
Okay.
You should know.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Fantastic. No notes. it's bigger than a bread box.
Correct.
And it's a thing, and it's kind of sporty.
Mm.
Fuck. Is it something to do with Bulldog, the character Bulldog?
No. Good question.
Oh, fuck.
Sarah.
Well, I was going to guess that it was Bulldog's gong, so I now have to think of larger than a bread box things that are sporty. And my mind has emptied somehow of Frasieronic things. Is it the bird that sits on Niles' head, the Camus apartment?
Is the theory that sport is falconry with that cockatoo?
Yes. Cockatoo-ry?
I don't know. I'm falconry.
Will.
Is it directly related to a Seattle sports team?
No.
Oh, God.
Dave.
Is it something you wear?
No. Sarah.
Oh, shit. Because my next guess was going to be those hideous tennis sweaters, but no. Oh, sport things that people do. Is it the chair that Marty sits in to watch sports?
Good question,
television?
But no. Will.
Is it related to Niles at all?
It is related to Niles.
Mm. Okay. Is it in multiple episodes?
No. Dave.
Oh, is it a machine?
In a sense, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, is the sport is connected to baseball?
No. Okay. Sarah.
I thought it might be the pitching machines in the.
Oh yeah, no. Yeah.
Is the sport it's related to fencing?
No. Will.
Is the sports related to basketball?
No. Mm. Dave.
There are no more sports. Football.
No.
Fuck.
Sarah.
Is it a tennis court?
No. Mm. Will.
Is it related to soccer?
No. Dave.
Is it related to a sport that uses a ball?
No. Sarah.
Is there a puck involved?
Help.
I'm sorry, if it doesn't have a ball, it's not a sport. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. That's
but golf.
That's something, yeah, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Sheesh.
What a weird way for Will to get canceled.
Yeah. This is something that Niles enjoys.
No. Dave.
Is it a sport played in the Olympics?
Yeah, I think so.
Is it a sport played on water?
No.
About rowing. Does he row or something?
Probably.
Harvard team or...
That seems like something he would do. I mean, Sideshow Bob does.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah.
Is it golf related?
No.
Golf is
no ball. You can ask another question.
Oh.
My mind has emptied of sports, machines, anything related to Frasier. Is it a... Does it involve a singlet?
Yeah. Oh, thought you had it.
That's a shame.
Since we're running short of time, I will say the person who is most famous for doing this sport does have ball-related situation. I'll say that.
Great.
Goodness.
Will. Mr. Belvedere.
Is it Mr. Belvedere?
Goodness.
Dave.
A ball-related situation. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Is there... Is this a callback to Cheers at any point?
No. Dave.
Oh, my God. A sport that doesn't use a ball.
Correct.
Does this sport have a professional league?
League?
Yeah, like NHL, NFL.
I mean, I don't think so.
Okay.
No. It's not one of the Dicks, whatever, or Big Five, I guess.
I don't know what that means, but okay.
Big Five. That's what I was thinking of.
Doesn't have a something National League kind of situation.
No. Sarah.
Is it sumo related? I just can't.
Will.
I have no information left.
To illustrate the depths of my knowledge I have right now, is it Donkey Fest?
It's not Donkey Fest.
Good guess.
Still not Donkey Fest.
All right. Is this sport a sport that is played, it is shown being played on the show?
We see the people involved, one of whom is Niles, doing the thing with the thing that I'm trying to drill down on. So, yes.
Oh, I'm more confused than ever. All right. And it's bigger than a bread box, this thing, correct?
I'm going to have to call it in a second.
Well, hang on. That's correct? Bigger than a bread
bigger
box?
Bigger than, yes. Mm-hmm. That's been established.
And it's something that's done at the Olympics.
Yeah.
Is there a conveyance involved?
Yes.
I don't know why I'm thinking of that. I can't place it. Is it bobsledding?
No. Oh my gosh, you're so close and then so far. Sarah.
Is there a cycle?
Yes.
A bicycle?
Yes. Yes, Sarah's got it. It's Niles or Fraser's bike when they learn how to ride bikes for the bike-a-thon at the station.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't think I ever would have gotten there. Dang, nice.
Sarah wins!
Final scores, please, Sarah. Let's make this official.
Give us the final scores, Sarah.
Final scores. That last one was worth 2 points.
Well, it can be worth as many as you want. Really.
<right.
laughs> So you make up the final score, please.
You're right. So we'll... helped us to get to the following scores. Dave has 2 points. Woo. I have 22
points. Wow. Happy birthday, Sarah.
Thanks.
Sarah.
All right, guys. Thank you, Tara. Good game time. Thank you, everybody. That is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We got into the weeds on Guy Ritchie's Netflix series The Gentlemen before going around the dial with stops at Animal Control, The Curse, As We Speak, and Shogun. Sarah presented all the evidence to win her canon case for Law & Order's trophy. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's non-regulation game time from Tara. Next up, it's Manhunt on Extra Extra Hot Great. And it's the Extra Credit Bonanza on EHG Prime right here next week. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariano,
I took her to Ireland.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Not when you say it like that.
And Mr. Will Leach.
I'm so... Can we talk about the curse for like an hour?
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra. Hot, great.
We'll pack it up. We'll pick it up later on. It's over. You can go home. Thank you very much. Mr. fucking Smithers. Mr. Burns. No, it's not happening.